Our gospel this morning comes from John's gospel. It's the gospel that we often read at this time of the year. You'll recognize if you've been doing church for a while that the readings of the church go on a three-year cycle, and there are four gospels. And the way that we add that extra gospel in is to especially draw on the gospel of John in and around Christmas, and then in and around Easter. And so we are in the thick of that. The other thing that the gospel wants to be sure to do is, in the light of Easter, to try to talk about how it is that we, as people who would follow in the way of Jesus, can begin to understand who Jesus was and understand the ways in which we can connect with who he is. And so the metaphors of what it is to be the Lord are an especially focal point for the Gospels in these weeks after Easter. So hear these words from John, it's chapter 10, beginning at verse 11. Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand, who is not the shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming, and he leaves the sheep and runs away. And the wolf snatches the sheep and scatters them. The hired hand runs away because a hired hand does not care for the sheep, not really. But I am the good shepherd, and I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold, and I must bring them also, and they will come to listen to my voice, so there will be one flock, finally one shepherd. But for this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again." Friends, this is the word of God, and it can be trusted. Believe it or not, it's actually kind of difficult to learn a lot about modern shepherds from the internet. I mean, the information has to be out there. You know the internet. I really tried. I wanted to come in this morning and tell you about the blog I'd found, or the chat room where the shepherds of the world all go to compare notes and, you know, all that stuff. No such luck. If you Google shepherd, you can do this when you get home. Don't do it now. If you Google shepherd, what you get is actually screen upon screen upon screen of sermons about the passage that you just heard. Some of them are okay. And then you get screen upon screen upon screen about pastors, written by pastors. And as you might guess, when you get screen upon screen upon screen of something, it all goes south really quick, right? For example, I learned there's a whole argument out there between evangelical writers about whether a pastor is supposed to be a shepherd or a rancher. It's true. I'm not making it up. When I say it's an argument, I mean that too. From what I could gather, a lot of people who went to seminary like in the 90s were told that you don't want to be just a shepherd. You want to be a rancher. Management consultants apparently came into the schools to tell them this. This was, you know, there's no future in shepherding. It's all ranching. But as one pass, you get how this is going to be, right? There's going to be all that, and then there's going to be the blowback, and then the blowback to the blowback, and this is the state of the question at this point. As one pastor responded, a successful rancher is someone who checks out his flock from a helicopter or via satellite. He has hired hands who actually handle the flock and its problems. Okay, that sounds probably right, right? Another made the point of the fact that the Bible has a few different distinct words for shepherd, but that none of them actually correspond to the notion of the rancher. And depending on how you read the Bible, just to say that the word's not biblical can actually be a real put-away shot. And the guy who wrote that up, I got the feeling, really felt that it was, because he felt like once he had said that, there wasn't really anything left to say. I did not, in my research, find any current sort of spirited defenses of being a rancher in this sense, although I gather there must be some. Right, so hold that thought for a minute. Trying to come at shepherding another way, I did read somewhere that in 2005, a Turkish newspaper reported 1,500 sheep had run over a cliff, exhibiting a behavior that's known as flocking. Right, you can probably guess what flocking is, right? Well, apparently when it happens, things can get pretty bad pretty fast. And apparently it's true, even if one sheep shows a little gumption or moves quickly for whatever reason, it triggers this flocking, even to the point that it lures the others right over a cliff before anybody knows what is happening. You'll be glad to know that in the case of the Turkish sheep, only 450 of them died because, as it turned out, the ones on the bottom of the pile cushioned the fall for all of the others, and they just went and pranced along as if nothing had happened. Turkish newspapers sound more fun than our newspapers, I gotta say. I mention it, though, because the danger of flocking might suggest why shepherds are so attentive to the sheep who wanders away. Because maybe the problem isn't just how vulnerable a sheep becomes if it wanders off alone and gets lost, though of course that's also true. The further problem with a wayward sheep is also about how quickly and catastrophically, everything can unspool if the others follow. And when you put it that way, I mean, you feel bad for the shepherds, right? I mean, it sounds like if you're a shepherd, you can't drop your attention for a second, right? Not for a second. They can't. They can't because the sheep won't drop their attention for a second. The sheep can't be counted on to stop and, figure out what's happening. Sheep aren't like that. The sheep won't stop and ask, I see that there's a charge. Who's actually leading this particular charge? The sheep don't do that. Sheep aren't going to say and like, well, let me Google monthly wolf sighting statistics for this particular geolocation before I really decide if this is likely to be a wolf. Sheep don't do that. They just react, right? They just react. I've been thinking about that. Because I've been thinking about, so if that's what sheep are actually like, and Jesus was close to the land in the way that we believe that he was, what's it supposed to mean when Jesus refers to us as sheep? I mean, I always thought he was naming how he sees something lovely and kind of innocent in us. I think he is. I think he sees that in us for sure. But all that notwithstanding, in calling us his sheep, I wonder if he isn't also reminding us about just how powerful, even dangerous, our reactivity can make us. That in this powerful way, at the drop of a hat, at the snap of a twig, the glitter of something over there that happens to catch our eye, we can turn into a menace for ourselves and others, no matter how big or how small our flock might be. Because that's also part of what it means to be sheep. And if you think of it that way, it goes a long way toward explaining why it is we need Jesus, right? He's not just supposed to be the kind of broad source of inspiration or comfort or, you know, all that stuff. He's the guide we need to listen and look for, particularly in the moments when we're most overwhelmed, particularly when listening may be the hardest thing for us to do. It may be that coming to believe in ourselves in the best sense, coming to understand who it is we're called to be in the best sense, is actually learning not just to trust ourselves, not entirely. Because no matter where we get to, we need to remember just how quickly we are capable of leading ourselves astray. And maybe even taking others with us when we go. And in that sense, what he's trying to do in the passage today is to present a clear alternative to that. He's saying that we need to take our cue from him. Because the point is not just that we're sheep. He's not just leaving us with, you guys are sheep. He's saying that we're his sheep. And because we are his sheep, then it's in us to hear his voice. That his voice is the voice that can cut through all the other sounds, all the other feelings, all the other everything. And I think this is where I can identify something worth taking away from, you know, sort of my deep dive on the internet this week. Because, you know, the world so often seems to imagine God as a rancher, as somewhere way up there flying around in a helicopter, right? Or vaguely following us all by satellite, not one by one, but like, oh, looks like things are kind of okay over there. That God is remote above it all, a rancher. And what Jesus wants us to know is that he's the shepherd, that he's down here at our level, that he's here to handle us and to be with us in our problems, even if and even when that means crawling through the muck to get to us and to save us most especially from ourselves, some of our worst instincts. And the challenge for us then is to learn to listen for his voice and to wait for his guidance and to trust that when we go astray, he is already coming in search for us, because he already knew that we were missing before even we did. And that's what it means to talk about him as a shepherd and about us as sheep. It's a story, the story of the Good Shepherd, that the church tells after Easter, just as the disciples were first grappling for themselves with what it would mean to listen for Jesus in this new way. and to go forward then to call the world to flock to him. And that lesson of learning to listen for his voice, well, life is a stern teacher for that one, isn't it? It's a lesson that we learn or learn again with every comment that we quickly realize we were a little hasty in making. With every email that we realize we were too quick to send. Every suspicion we were too quick to indulge. Every bad report we were too quick to take at face value. Every fear we were too quick to make into a wolf about to strike. And that's not to say that those things don't happen. That's not to say that those fears aren't real. But it is to say that learning how to discern rather than simply to react is the work of our lives. We see the power of that pull, the pull away from what is lovely and innocent and kind and giving in ourselves. We see the power of that pull. We can't entirely help being pulled. But while we're sheep, again, the point that Jesus wants to make is that we're his sheep. And there is his voice that would cut through all that and interrupt some of that cycle. He's calling to us. He's looking for us. He's crawling right into whatever brambles we've managed to get ourselves stuck in, and he's working to bring us back to green pastures and still waters, to the places where all may safely graze, because that is who he is. And who he is the thing that will teach us who we might be. And so, as the psalmist says, oh, that we might listen. That we might listen for his voice. Amen.